genre.
Welcome to the Jay and Silent Bob Minute, where we are covering the movie Chasing Amy, 1 minute at a time. Today we are covering minute 4, which is quite possibly the greatest fancy literature minute ever. I'm Jeff Ferry.
I'm introducing myself, aren't I?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I'm John Gallo from the Art, Comedy, and Pop Culture Network.
Oh, look at that. It's almost like that's ACPN.
Yeah, it is now. Because I got tired of people calling it Adventure Club Podcast Network when I never said it was.
And then everybody going, but it's not the Adventure Club. And then you're like, well, no, it's not the Adventure Club. See, it's ACPN. And then it's, yeah, I see where that would be a problem.
Mm. Yeah, so I simplified it.
Oh, that's good. So you got to catch John on his network with their multiple podcasts that are all clogging up my feed.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know how it is. I had a week off from work, and that's where I listen to my podcasts. So then you go back to work, you're like, oh, my God. And it's just like, everybody dumped all their episodes.
That's me updating the site every time. Yeah. Like, especially we have a guy now who like, actually we have two people who like randomly post episodes on like Saturdays and Sundays. So it's like, dude, I'm not around on Saturdays and Sundays. So like Monday morning, sometimes I'll be like, oh, this is out. This is brand new.
We just have so much content. All right. Well, speaking of content, we are at the beginning of Chasing Amy, so we're going to get to introduce a lot of new people this week and this minute in particular. This minute starts with Willem, our old friend from Mallrats, and ends with Banky explaining some stuff. So we were talking offline. Do you remember Willem from Mallrats, right? Our old buddy.
I do. And full disclosure for the folks at home, this is probably my least favorite of the movies. I've only seen it once. I think the order goes, I saw Dogma when I was like 15 or 16, because we used to rent movies at Blockbuster every week. And then I saw the cartoon in 2000, and I said, huh, Clerks. So then I tried going back to the first three, and I'm like, okay, Clerks is good. Mallrats is really good. Chase Amy, let's stick with Dogma.
Yeah, I had this discussion with Chris. Oh, Chris is supposed to be my co-host. He stepped out to get some Archie comics and hasn't returned yet. So when he does, he'll be back. But we don't know if he'll be back or not. He really loves his Archie comics. We were talking the other day, and I think it's Clerks is a Kevin Smith movie, Mallrats is a Kevin Smith movie, and Chasing Amy is too. But this is way more of a 1990s independent movie than the other ones are.
Right, and it feels more like Kevin Smith was maybe trying to stray away more from the comedic aspect and more of a, not so much a dramatic, but like artsy, I guess.
Well, and he has explained, he said his first four movies, he's like, he wrote them because he had something to say. He wrote Clerks because he was a clerk. Mallrats, he knew that life. Chasing Amy, this was about his relationship with Joey Lauren Adams. I mean, she wasn't a lesbian or anything, but she had way more experience right. than him, and he felt inadequate. All that stuff's him. Dogma was about all his faith, and he said when he hit that point, like, he was famous Kevin Smith by then. He's like, I didn't have any more stories to tell. I wasn't a normal person anymore.
Again, that's the first Smith movie I saw, because, you know, it was a big deal. It was like, oh, it's a big movie. It's got Chris Rock in it and George Carlin, and we watched it, and it wasn't like the deep, like, raunchy humor that you get with Clerks and Mallrats.
Yeah, he straddled it pretty well there.
Yeah.
I think what hurt that movie is what hurts any movie like that is because it had religious stuff in it and people get their sphincters get all tight and, you know, ugh. God forbid. All right, so I'm going to quickly talk about our buddy Ethan Suplee here. I'm not going to get into his whole history, but he obviously was in Mallrats wearing a very similar outfit to what he's wearing here.
Now, is this the same character since it's in the same universe?
Okay, it is the same character, which is interesting because he's the same character, even though he seems way more normal in this movie. He just seems like a fanboy, where he seems like a psychotic in the last movie.
Right. That other one, he was like, oh, I gotta see the sailboat in the picture.
Yeah, and he had mustard all down the front of him.
This one, he seems more like, and I don't know if you're familiar with John Schnepp.
I know who it is, yes.
Yeah, rest in fact. I think we're coming up on the year. But very passionate about the comics.
Yes. Like, so passionate where you're like, I feel like inadequate about my passion for this because you're so passionate about it. Like, I wish you start thinking like, I wish I cared about something this much. Like, even things I enjoy, I don't like this much. But yeah, he's also the same character who appears in Clerks, played by a totally different actor. Huh. So that makes things interesting. So in Clerks, he's the guy that comes. He's Snowball in Clerks. The guy that comes in and goes, "Hey, Ronnie, what's going on?" And he's the one that got snowballed. And he's played by Scott Mosier. So between Clerks and Mallrats, he gained 200 pounds and became a different actor.
It's happened to the best of characters in movies. Look at James Bond.
Which is interesting because Mallrats is in-universe takes place the day before Clerks.
Huh.
So maybe he lost 200 pounds, I guess.
Maybe Dogma happened before Clerks and somehow he dropped all the weight from something magic that happened.
I don't know. You start getting like that timeline issue of like, you know what? It's best not to think about it. But mm-hmm. he's got the same sort of outfit on. He also seems like 5 years younger than he did in the last movie.
He does.
Yeah. Because he's like got such a baby face. Hair. Yeah. And you can see his hair. He doesn't have that stupid hat on. And yeah, this was still when he was very heavy Ethan Suplee. Not his heaviest. He definitely got bigger after this.
Right.
I remember him in, what's that movie with Earl. Earl? He was really big. And then that Ashton Kutcher movie. The Butterfly Effect. Was that it?
Oh, was he in that?
Oh my God, yeah.
No, I was thinking of Evolution.
Yeah, right around that time. That would have been
when he was like the comic relief. Well, not really so much the comic relief. He just showed up in the background because I haven't seen that movie in forever. That's a movie to watch.
With Duchovny and what's her face? The redhead and the Julianne Moore
and the 7-Up dude.
Yeah, the guy from Mad TV.
Orlando Jones.
Yeah. That's when he was.
But it was
that was like early 2000s. He was real big then.
Right, and it was him, and it was the dude who played Donkey Lips on Salute Your Shorts, and he was bigger than the dude who played Donkey Lips on Salute Your Shorts.
But then, right around Earl, he started dropping the weight, and then he got down to, and, I mean, the guy, he's a fine actor, and he's always working. He's definitely...
Oh, yeah, he looks fantastic.
I mean, I know him from the Kevin Smith movies, but he's definitely that guy for people who are just normal moviegoers. Like, oh, yeah, I've seen that guy before. And I'm sure this was one day of shooting for him, but... And, of course, Mad Men by Mike Allred gets another shout-out. Mike Allred was in the last minute, you know, pimping his book. And so what do you think of the Ben Affleck look in this movie? His little Van Dyke?
Yeah, it's different for Affleck. You don't see him with too much facial hair.
This is also the first movie where he looks like what I consider what Affleck looks like now. Like, he's got his, like, adult face now. We're like in Mallrats and what's Dazed and Confused. He still was like, still had like a little bit of a doughy like kid face.
True.
School ties. He still kind of had it a little bit.
Well, how many years was this before Good Will Hunting?
Good Will Hunting had to be right after this because I think they were filming this. They might have been filming Chasing Amy or Dogma when the awards for Good Will Hunting came out. So that might have been the same year. Good Will Hunting. I feel like it was 97 as well. It was. It was the same year. So I think I cannot remember the timeline now. I think they may have won their Oscars while they were filming. I think they were filming Dogma when they won their Oscars. So that would have been like 98.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Because I know they won their Oscars because they got up there and they thanked everybody and they didn't thank Kevin. And Ben told them, well, I did kind of thank you because I said, and everybody else. And that included you. Which is a huge dick move, but is also something awesome to say to your friend.
It's true.
All right.
And then he was like, hey, you want a guest spot in Daredevil?
Don't worry. It's going to be a huge movie. There's no way that they're going to come out with a TV series 10 years later that's going to make us just shake our heads at this. Don't worry. Hey, no. It's the perfect time for superhero movies. It's not like we're at that weird ebb in between the old ones and the new ones, that weird downtime. Don't worry. Fox
will always keep this property.
Yeah, there's no way Fox is just going to sell this out, and then it's going to get buried by Marvel. And Marvel's going to pretend like it didn't happen. All right, Ethan Suplee is going to run through a bunch of famous teams. He's going to go through two famous teams, Bill and Ted and Cheech and Chong. what are your thoughts on the Bill and Ted and Cheech and Chong averse? Did you watch either one of them?
Oh, yeah, of course. I guess it's a fair assessment.
I mean, I see where he's coming from. Like it's almost like someone describing a Kevin Smith movie. Of just like they're missing all the nuance of it, and they're like, "Yeah, they curse all the time. Ooh, it's awesome." But yeah, I see where he's coming from. And Kevin has said Bill and Ted obviously is a huge influence on him,
right?
Cheech and Chong, I guess, just because of the stoner thing. Although I would say they're much less like Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, because they don't harp on the wee shtick.
Yeah, like Jay doesn't act all
like it's there.
They're more about selling it than anything else.
That's true, too.
I think Bill and Ted is a more apt thing because they get drug around onto adventures that they shouldn't be a part of.
That's true, too. I didn't think of that.
And then, of course, so that's, you know, that's like your run-of-the-mill guy. Bill and Ted and Cheech and Chong. And then, of course, because, you know, Holden is such an auteur, he's got to be Mr. Fancy Pants and throw out Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and Vladimir and Estragon.
I don't even know the last two, I'll be honest.
So, I think I put this up online. I go, this really tests your literary knowledge. So, did you know who Bill and Ted were? Did you know who Cheech and Chong were? I would say most people have probably at least have heard the term Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and may not know what it's from, or they might know that it's from Hamlet. But, like, I think I read Hamlet, you know, in, like, 10th grade because we were forced to.
Yeah, well, we were kind of forced to, but fortunately I had one of those classes where they were like, okay, well, here's the short story version of it, and here's the movie starring Kenneth Branagh. I'm like, okay, fine.
Well, that's all I need. What do I need to read this long-ass play for if I'm just going to watch this? And I know there's a whole movie called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Just for anyone who's not in the know, I'm not going to read off who Bill and Ted and Cheech and Chong are. If you're listening to this podcast and you don't know who they are, I just can't help you. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are characters in William Shakespeare's tragedy Hamlet. They are childhood friends of Hamlet summoned by King Claudius to distract the prince from his apparent madness and, if possible, to ascertain the cause of it. So they're just side characters, and they become almost shorthand in other movies for, like, side characters whose adventures you'd like to follow.
Right.
I've heard people say, well, who do you think the Rosencrantz of Guildenstern are of this movie? Like, in this movie, who would you like to follow who's not the main character? However, I was kind of like you when he said Vladimir and Estragon. I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I just Googled it, too, and I'm like, oh, okay.
I looked
never
it up.
I've never read it.
Yeah, it's for Waiting for Godot. I read the thing about it. It's like, it's a play about people waiting. I'm like, this sounds like crap. Like, I understand that it's very famous and it's considered very highbrow, and maybe that's why I've never seen it. I mean, it's French theater. Right there, you've already got, like, two strikes against you.
I keep confusing Waiting for Godot with I'm Not Rappaport.
Yeah.
Which I also haven't seen.
Waiting for Godot is this play by Samuel Beckett in which two characters, Vladimir and Estragon, wait for the arrival of someone named Godot who never arrives. Wow. That sounds exciting.
Maybe they needed to wait until, like, the 2000s when Gal Gadot was famous.
Well done. She's waiting for Gal Gadot. It's the sequel we've all been waiting for.
which actually ties back in because Ben Affleck.
Yeah. You know who was waiting for Gal Gadot? Warner Brothers. Because they're like, oh, thank God. Finally, something made some money.
This is true.
Followed by the sequel, thank God Jason Momoa is here. That's their follow-up. Yeah. I love WB. Like, the less famous the character is, the better off they're with it. They're like, Batman and Superman, no idea what to do with these guys.
It's like they took the Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy formula.
Yeah.
They're just like, okay, let's run with that.
Yeah, it's like, listen, if nobody knows what they're expecting, we should be fine. We'll just work with that. Don't worry. I'm sure they'll make a Batman or Superman movie that's good. I mean, they haven't yet, but I'm sure they could.
It's true.
I would just like Superman not to be such a grumpy bitch. I mean, that's my real problem with it. Like, what's he so sad about? He's like...
It's like Batman should be sadder than that.
I know, like, Batman, like, that's his... You know he's got to be mad. He's like, yo, that's, like, my whole gig, man, is being sad and, like, upset. And Superman's cutting in on my action here. He's like, no, you're supposed to be, like, happy and... Or at least, like... Hopeful. Yeah, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Yeah. And what's his face? Ethan Suplee has the same reaction basically we had. What? Who's that?
Is that a comic book?
Yeah. So the scene cuts right in half, right at 30 seconds. And the second half, we get maybe my favorite Scott Mosier character he's ever played. Just the biggest douchebag ever. With his brown leather jacket on, his shirt unbuttoned with the chest hair out, his awful mustache with the cigarette over the ear. And just, like, why is this guy at a comic book convention? Like,
probably, if I had to play devil's advocate here, probably, like, someone chaperone.
Yeah. Either that or he's this guy. He's got one thing that he likes there. He likes just anime. Or he likes just one comic. And then he goes around to everybody else.
Mad Magazine.
Yeah. He goes around. It's hilarious you mentioned Mad Magazine. I brought that up last minute. He goes around and shits on everybody else's thing. Or, like, he likes, like, one guy. He's like, I only like Constantine. Like, that's the... Or, I only like Sandman. That's the only real comic. Everything else is garbage. And then he goes around and just dumps on everybody else. Like, oh, can you believe, you know, Nichelle Nichols is here? Ridiculous. You know, whoever watched that show, and you're like, that show's like super popular. No, that's for losers.
That was like one of my first times going down to Dragon Con in Atlanta, and you see like the people that like were in shows in like the 70s, like Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica's here. Yeah.
Well, he got two bites at the apple because then he got to be on the new Galactica.
This is true.
But like, it's one of those, part of me, I used to be the same way, like, oh my god, I can't believe these guys here. And then I'm like, wait a minute, if I was in one of those shows and somebody was like, hey, do you want to show up here and sign a couple autographs and make some money? Yes, I do. I do want to do that.
It depends what they're offering as far as money.
Well, and the other thing is, what else are you doing with your life? What other revenue income stream do you have at this point? Mm. Like, yeah, if you got like a normal job, you're like, I don't have to do that. Or
like, listen, I live in the Northwest. I'm not coming out to your Jersey Con for, you know, a couple of bucks.
Yeah, or you could be like, say you lived here, and you're like, well, I'm not going to go to Comic-Con. I'm not going to go out west, but, you know, be willing to hit all the local ones that you can get to. I see a lot of those people do that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, I'll drive an hour to go sit there. But like, hey, do you want to fly down to Atlanta? No, I do not. Especially if you're like a real low level guy, like, you know, you were you had three lines in Star Trek in 1968.
Oh god.
You may not be quite the draw some of the other people. There, although was. I've seen some weird ones. Somebody just posted a picture with the kid that was the Kittner boy from Jaws.
Oh my god.
I mean, he's got what, two lines, and then his whole thing, he's most famous for something he has nothing to do with.
Yeah, dying.
Yeah, dying. Just being a bloodstain.
Being eaten.
So you can take a picture of him, and I think he puts his face inside of a big shark or something. I don't know.
Wow.
I was like, part of me is like, that's so pathetic. The other part of me is like, I would definitely get my picture with him, though. Like, yeah. Getting my picture with a star is okay, but like, you always want to get your picture with like the weirdest guy at the con. Like, oh my.
It's true.
It's like, oh my god, look at this. This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Let's go get a picture with him.
I should start doing that when I get back. I haven't been doing the Comic-Con thing much lately, but maybe I'll get back on that eventually and start like looking for like the weirdest person.
It's like, I was the little boy in the Burbs. Oh, get over here. Get a picture of me.
I was the femur.
Yeah. I was the prop master that handed Tom Hanks the femur. He's standing in front of the artist table and he goes, what do you draw this or something? I mean, you can only really draw it or ink it. I mean, there's not much else you can do. He's like, no, I just talk about it with people.
And I love, I don't know if you noticed what I noticed, but in the background is the picture of the comic blown up, and LaForce is on it from all yes. that.
LaForce is their villain in the thing. And he must have a whole team of LaForce, because the guy next to him also has the same hat on. Mm. So he must be like the Joker, where he makes his guys dress up like he does.
Well, is this the same comic book that they had in Mallrats?
No, Mallrats, they had, there was just like comic book characters of them. So like there was, I think there was one LaForce was in. But, like, these were all drawn by Mike Allred. So, in Blunt Man and Chronic, he's, like, one of the villains that they fight. But you only ever see, like, a handful of panels. And it's always the same, like, five or six. Because I guess while Mike Allred was willing to draw them, he's like, listen, I'm not drawing, like, 50 things. I got to admit, though, I would also be intrigued to be, like, if somebody told me they were an anchor, I would also be asking the follow-up question of, like, what does that mean? Like, I don't know anything about drawing. If you would have asked 15, 18, 20-year-old me, I would have assumed whoever drew it drew all the things and colored it in. I wouldn't have known that there was like separate people doing all that stuff. Like, I knew somebody wrote in the dialogue because I knew that was like a Stan Lee thing to write like the dialogue in. But like, I would have never known. I assumed people that drew everything.
Yeah, I always figured it was like the one guy. It's like even with like animation, like I didn't know the ins and outs of it until I started looking into like Adult Swim stuff.
Oh my god. It, like,
and then
the first time you realize how long it takes to make like 1 second of animation, you're like, oh my god, why does anyone do this? Like, why was this even discovered? This is terrible.
Right. And a friend of mine who worked on Aqua Teen, he invited me out to the old studio a few times. And it's just remarkable because like this one does the animation, this one does the storyboarding. It's like everyone has their own part in this 22-minute No, not even. 11-minute? Yeah, 11-minute cartoon.
And yeah, that's like, now imagine doing it the way, like, Disney does, like, their full-length animated ones, where, like, it's not even, like, one or two layers deep, it's, like, 15 layers deep.
Oh, my God. I remember reading up on something where, like, they like, literally developed their own camera system originally.
Oh, yeah, there was, like, it was, like, a giant camera, right?
Yeah. It was like as tall as a floor, and you. It was like, okay, you have the background, and you have the trees, and you have the birds.
Well, I mean, you look at their old animation, the stuff from like the 30s and 40s, and while you can tell that it's different and it's older,
oh yeah,
it's not like you can't show it to a kid today, and they're not like, you watch a movie from 1938, you're like, oh my god, this can barely function as a movie unless it's like one of the five best movies ever made. But you watch animation from then, and kids can't tell the difference between animation from the 40s and the 60s and the 90s, unless there's computer stuff in it.
Kids, I've figured out recently that kids don't care about animation or story when they're young. They care about shapes and sounds and colors.
Oh, yeah. When they're real little, they don't give a damn about any of that.
I've based this on the fact that I learned Sunday morning that there's a knockoff of Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, my God. Really? What's it called? Please tell me it's some sort of pun.
I don't remember. I've been calling it Budget Kung Fu Panda. Ugh. I'm sure it has like it has.
I was hoping it was like Karate Koala.
No, it was. It's literally a panda. And get this, the voice of the panda, Rob Schneider.
Oh God! They even got like a discount Jack Black.
Yep. So, and it's funny because like the animation, it's like they must have purchased like whatever they use to animate like N64 games.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like that jerky animation that, like, I can't even explain it. I recorded videos of it. I should post them online.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Watching Budget Kung Fu Panda.
Can't wait to explain that to the wife when she walks in the room. I shut the laptop real quick. She's like, what are you watching? Nothing. It's like,
it's porn.
I swear to God, it's porn. Open that up. Oh, okay, I'm watching a child show. Are you watching Kung Fu Panda? I wish. It's not. All right. Well, do you have anything else for this minute? I'm sure this conversation is not going to get out of hand in the next minute. I'm sure there's going to have a nice discussion, and he'll sign his book.
Oh, okay. nothing about that, but I did look up the name of the movie, The Adventures of Panda Warrior.
Oh, good Lord. It's like you don't see this too much anymore. Well, they still do it, but like it was more prevalent back in the Blockbuster days when like a movie would come out. It'd be like Con Air, and it had like, you know, everybody's walking up with the plane in the background, and then they'd make a movie like... Prison Plane, and they would make the cover look exactly the same.
Well, that's
except every actor was a piece of crap.
Right.
Instead of Nicolas Cage, it's C. Thomas Howell.
Right. Well, that's Asylum Films. They still do that. Yeah. I think.
I just don't like. I know they still do it. Just I could remember it used to all be about the cover because it was like they're like if we could just trick one out of every 20 people.
The best was when they got in trouble for. They did the knockoff of Battleship, and I think they just called it Warship or something. And Universal was like, nuh-uh. And they're like, oh, we're sorry. We've been doing this for years, and we didn't realize we came too close to the name.
Yeah. Battleship was where they were going to draw their line in the sign. Whoa, 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 whoa. Do not insult this movie that lost $100 million for us.
I think they ended up changing the name to, like, American Warship.
Oh, good Lord. All right. Well... We're gonna steal this American Warship right into the port. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
They can find me probably the best place, acpnet.net. We have all of our fun podcasting endeavors, and some other people have joined us as well. So there's got to be something there that tickles your fancy, from you know movies to we don't have a video game podcast. We were trying to, but like mostly movies and TV and some geek stuff and some. All around nonsense that maybe you'll.
And if you're looking for us still for some reason, we're over at Dueling Genre. We obviously are doing Chasing Amy right now. We've previously done Mallrats and we've done Clerks. And there's other movies by minutes there that are probably better than ours, covering way more famous movies like Lord of the Rings and Back to the Future and, you know, actual viable franchises. Well, you know, so.
The other movies are still worth, you know.
I would have to look. I'm guessing by far our movies made the least amount of money of everyone on there. There's a Disney one. There's Rocky's on there. Like, yeah, we definitely have.
Have they? Didn't they? They did the Talking Cat one.
That's not. I mean, that's movies by minutes. There's only about eight of them on Dueling Genre.
Oh, okay.
You'll notice they took like all the good franchises though.
Oh boy. But there isn't one about American Warships, I imagine.
Oh my God, though. Part of me, you know, when Chasing Amy's over. If we have a special episode about American Warship, you will be my first call.
I don't even want to know what it's about.
I don't even know if you could. Could you cover the whole thing, or would it just be like, all right, John, how far did you get into it before you gave up?
Well, there's Honestly, there's at least 90 episodes in this movie.
Oh my god!
It says it's got a running time of 90 minutes.
Yeah, no way. Says it's maybe a commentary is the way to go with that one.
Yeah, like a 5-minute commentary. This happened, that happened, the end.
Oh, it says this happened, and then we shut it off. So it's 5 minutes long. All right, so join us for what the hell will it be? Minute 5. Until then, enjoy the shared moment.